Good morning, comrade. You are listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning, Comrade. Today in the studio, we have... Actually, not in the studio. I keep doing this. Not in the studio. We have Scott. Scott is on our experimental new remote system. What's up, Scott?
Hey, I'm just over here experimenting on the late, on the internet.
Remote system. Yeah, we were just messing around online.
Yeah.
Same as always.
Over here. This is before the LSU game. I'm hanging out with my Elmer's green onion pearls. Yeah, that game. traffic's been a mess all day. Yeah. The weather sucks. According to some people, I actually like it.
You
I like
don't
it being
like
kind
it.
Of dreary.
You like London Jack the Ripper weather? Oh, you well, disgust yeah. me.
I mean, if you... I'm getting my Mad Men reference out of here early. There's a character who's like, there's not actually fog in London. It was the coal from the factories.
There can be both of those things. It's not one or the other. It's not a dichotomy.
It was the fog. It was the coal from the factories. That's what it was.
Because it's an industrialized city or whatever. That's ridiculous.
But anyway, got a high life here too.
We live in the high life.
Watching all the pregame stuff about how the president is messing up traffic.
Yeah, Donald Trump is in our city now all of a sudden. And he's coming. For some reason, he just loves LSU and Alabama games. It's like the second time he's done it this year.
Well, Alabama was the place he did not get booed at. So he's I'll just go again.
But even though LSU, it's a Clemson this time, so I guess it's not
I guess he put it through his focus group and is like, oh yeah, you'll be fine, or
yeah, his little pedant freaks around him that it was fine.
He just screamed at everybody when he was on the toilet.
Oh, good news. From a live update, you heard it here first, folks. From the Metairie, Louisiana studios that I'm recording from, Sam is trying to ruin the show. He's stomping on my keyboard and trying to press all the buttons and close the program.
Sam the cat is always trying to ruin something.
Sam absolute chaos agent. We got a new kitten recently, have you met the new kitten?
No.
We got a little cat, and she's just constantly getting bullied by Sam.
Yeah.
Chase her and grab her by the throat and bite her and all these other kinds of things. It's kind of a mess. It's kind of a really rough situation. It's hard to watch.
That sounds terrible.
It actually is. And now I hear the mascot to the show are just freaking out in the background.
Oh, yeah. That is pretty rough. You got a whole pet thing going on over there.
Yeah, it's a zoo. Definitely a zoo. Four animals. So Donald Trump is in our city doing whatever the hell it is that he does when he comes to football games.
He likes to do his wave thing. He's got to get his juice back after he got booed in New York.
Enough about his hair.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. John Bel Edwards and all the people in the state legislature, they all got re-inaugurated today. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on. Why isn't John Bell having a resistance suite at the national championship game? What's going on with that? Where's the resistors for all this stuff?
He did talk about raising the minimum wage and getting fair wages.
Hey, I'm for that. I'm for raising the minimum wage.
I guess he's got elected. He's like, fuck. Forget about it.
I love the idea of Italian like Joey Gabagool, John Bell Edwards,
Joey Calabrese.
Yeah.
He's gonna rate John Bell's po' boy sandwich instead of his It's like hot meat sandwich.
Yeah. So what is Joey Calabrese?
Oh, man. He's just a meme page where it's like some guy just doing like dumb Italian jokes. It's like, oh, my wife, huh? Huh? Just like dumb stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's hard to explain. We had a friend of the show, Jacob Germain, on. He would be really good at it.
Well,
he's a Joey Calabrese expert.
This is a call out. He canceled for today, so.
Whoa.
Go ahead and go in on him.
Yeah, he's building a dresser or something, which is honestly honest work. You have to put your clothes away.
Yeah, I guess you do. It's pretty uncool and pretty unsophisticated, but I suppose these parts of life are necessary.
Me and you don't. I'm looking at a floor full of laundry.
I put my clothes away.
I have two kinds of laundry. The kind near the window, which is clean, and the kind near the closet, which is dirty. So, yeah.
Thank you for bringing it into the room with you. I appreciate that. That's very thoughtful.
Yeah. It's riveting stuff. But, yeah, back to the news. Yeah, John Bell, this is inauguration weather. We, hopefully not a prediction of things to come.
Mm-hmm.
But, unless he's going to make it rain on us.
He's not gonna get spoiled for you. He's John Bell's, like, as much of a not Eddie Rasponi as he is, he's not good either.
Yeah,
like he's not the worst, but he's not great.
He's fine. I mean, he's bad, but
he's bad, but he's fine.
He's like, I don't know. It's like a bomb that doesn't have the fuse lit. It's like, that's fine. Like, it's not ticking down.
The bomb's just holding steady.
Yeah. It's, like, properly stored. It's, like, not getting wet or anything. But, you know, it could go against you one day.
Yeah, there's a lot of LSU fans that just running around out there today, too. It's wild.
Yeah.
Not that many Clemson people running around.
I didn't see any Clemson people. I was in the city last night. I was like, it's going to be so busy. Mm-hmm. But I guess people from out of town only know about the French Quarter. They don't know that there's other parts of the city. I was uptown working at a bar.
Oh yeah, you're not gonna find any. You're not gonna find any tourists uptown on a Sunday night.
Yeah, but
they're all
the game,
drunk and doing karaoke at Cats or something.
Yeah, they're at Cats Meow or we're Bourbon Cowboy or something like that.
Bourbon Cowboy still open?
That beats me. I've never actually been.
I know Bourbon Cowboy was a thing.
I know Razoo is still open. I mean, that's where I used to go drink underage.
Oh yeah. Oh well, that's breaking the law. That's you, big guy.
Yeah.
I would never.
What's the statute of limitations on that? I'm not sure. If I'm gonna get, like, flagged by the SEC or something.
Let's just say that our position on illegal drinking underage is we're against it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't support other people doing it, but I was a pretty big fan when I was a kid. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
We keep getting derailed.
Yeah, so anyway, this is one of those times. It's just really hard to keep focused because there's just so much that's going on that we don't have control over. A bunch of weird stuff happening. You know, LSU's like playing for the national championship. We almost went to war with Iran a week ago. Now nobody's talking about that at all anymore.
Yeah, the Democratic field is narrowing. It's just pretty much between
bye, Cory Booker. That's no one is going to miss you now. Rosario Dawson has to like switch to Bernie or something.
No, I'm sure they're still dating, but.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she can actually endorse Bernie.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that she has to, like, date Bernie.
Yeah, you gotta throw all that Rosario Dawson weight behind Bernie. He needs it.
She was the night nurse.
Yeah, all the Beltway, like...
She was in Clerks, too.
All the Beltway, like, press is like, but what's Rosario Dawson gonna do? Gotta know.
Well, Robert has told the story, though, because, like, in the first time around, she was, like, one of the celebrities or whatever that, like, backed Bernie. And then, like, Robert says that he saw, like, the moment, because he was a delegate to the convention. He talked about how he could, like, see the moment where, like, Bernie did the concession, and the delegates that were present just sort of, like, razzed the, like, before, you know, she was in an unenviable position, Rosario Dawson, of, like, yeah, breaking the news to all the delegates that, like Bernie's hanging it up, and they did not take it well. And then they could see, like, the turn of her, like, backing off against, like, the Bernie supporters happening.
I actually have been in, like, a public speaking class, and it's very interesting because, like, the audience really has you, like, in the palm of their hand, and they can just crush you. Like, that can, like, really mess you up.
The problem is that most of the time they don't know it.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, we're the audience. We don't care. We'll just be rude. Like, it's, like, I don't know. Being scared, being on stage is scary.
I think, like, being on stage should be scary, at least to some extent, right?
Yeah. There should be, like, an air of responsibility about it.
If you're on stage, you have to be on stage for a reason, and you have to, like... Like, one of the problems that we have now, in a lot
too
of ways...
Stages.
No, it's not that there's too many stages. Is that, like, there's this idea that you kind of, like, have to respect whoever's on the stage just because they're on stage, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not really with that. That makes sense?
You're anti-stage.
No, I'm not anti the stage, but, like, if you're going to be up there, you might as well deliver. If you can't deliver, you're going to get what you're going to get. You're going to either kill or you're going to die up there, right?
I mean, yeah, that's like the whole...
That's like comedy 101, right?
That's like the Apollo. Like, if you bomb, the guy's going to brush you out, broom you off stage. Like.
a big shepherd's crook is going to pull you off the stage.
Yeah, you'll get the hook. Like Daffy Duck, you just get the hook.
I love the idea of a giant hook pulling someone off the stage in 2019.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Or like somebody, like, in, like, their YouTube channel or doing a live stream or whatever, and, like, a hook just, like, pulls them off of their camera.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Like Mayor Pete, like, loses to Iowa, so they just, like, hook him off stage.
Yeah, oh my God, that would be so cool. Like, or if, like, there was just ways to, like, do public embarrassment to these politicians that are failing us.
I think back in the day they had it pretty figured out. Like,
they used to tar and feather people, man. That's brutal.
Well, that's too much. Like, throwing, like, old vegetables, like ripe vegetables at you is, like, pretty good, though.
Putting you on a rail and, like, dragging you out of town is pretty sick in terms of public humiliation.
That's a pretty good, like a mixtape on your ass. Like, just putting you on, like, a train rail and, like, carrying you out of town and be like, you're out. You're out of here. But, like, I don't know. Who's still in the race? We have the billionaires.
Yang's in the race still. Yang's in the race. Bernie's in the race. Michael Bloomberg.
We have the millionaires and the billionaires.
Yeah, so basically you got, like, Bernie, you got Warren, you got Biden, you got Pete Buttigieg, and you have a bunch of schmoes.
Biden is so dead in the water, like.
He's at 15%. I was talking about this last night. I went on the show on live on radio, took a couple calls, actually. And Biden's at 15% right now in Iowa in that most recent poll. And 15%, if you get less than 15% of the vote, then you don't get any delegates. And if Joe Biden, the ostensive, like, front runner of the Democratic Party, he's been polling nationally in the front of everybody, and that's the truth. That's just what it is. It's like it is what it is, and there's flaws to polling, but he's in the front. But if he leaves Iowa with less than 15% and he gets zero delegates, he is hurt, dog. He's so messed up, huh?
Like, who do you know, like in any sphere, is, like, hardcore for Joe. Like, he's just the guy who's still got name value. Like, he's got more name value than Bernie in the fact that he was president, the vice president for 8 years.
He was there with Congress.
He's been on C-SPAN my entire life. Like, that's like his cachet. But, like,
he was there with president,
voter,
my guy.
Yeah, any real voter is not like, oh, Joe Biden. I love all his stances. I love how much push-ups he can do.
Yeah. I love it when he calls people in the audience fat.
Oh, no. Word.
So let's pause for station ID. You were listening to WHIV LP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning Comrade. So I wanted to talk a little bit about where a lot of this primary has been going with. There's a lot of like drama coming up about like Bernie Sanders is now attacking Elizabeth Warren and vice versa and all these other things, right? Have you heard of any of this?
I heard a little bit. I guess in a private meeting, someone said that Bernie said that he didn't think a woman could be president, which is pretty uncharacteristic of him, I'd say.
It's uncharacteristic of him. That's one of the angles of attack. There's another that was that was basically, I mean, if you ask me, it's like stating a fact, like the idea that that the Warren sort of constituency, I guess you could say, was disproportionately more white and more like highly educated than other constituencies, specifically like Biden and Sanders. And that was sort of like taken as an attack. Like somebody posted something into a Slack channel that like campaign volunteers and staff both sort of cohabitate, and it was taken down. And it kind of became a overnight controversy, which is really sort of like a fake beef, right?
Yeah.
And it was sort of like one of these things where a lot of like establishment Democrats were kind of like looking at it as though like Bernie was on the attack against Warren, like poor sweet Elizabeth Warren, which is sort of like, that's not even what's going on here at all.
Yeah. I mean, I guess like there had like a little tentative kind of like, let's just not pick each other apart.
Yeah. They were working together. Well, they're not working together, and they aren't, and they kind of shouldn't work together because they are coming from different places, but there are like similarities
in a parallel.
Yeah. And so there's a script that was sort of released that that Politico was sort of like got their hands on or something.
Yeah, and great.
And actually today, Randy Weingarten, you know who she is?
I don't.
Randy Weingarten is the president of the American Federation of Teachers, the national union.
Okay.
She sort of like credulously posted this. And I sort of like followed up with her saying like, hey, I'm a, you know, member of a AFT local. I really don't appreciate you like uncritically posting these smears, you know, about particular candidates that are in this thing. So anyway, there was so I'm going to read from this article that's in Politico. It says, it's by Holly Otterbein and Alex Thompson. And it's written in this sort of like breathless sort of way, like Iowa. The non-aggression pact between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren is seriously fraying. Sanders' campaign has been stealthily attacking Warren as a candidate of the upper crust who could not expand the Democratic base in a general election, according to talking points his campaign is using to sway voters and obtained by Politico. Now, this script that they're talking about that the campaign was rolling out was actually something that some volunteer, maybe a staff member, I think it was probably a volunteer, because like I'm in some Slack channels on some of these campaigns, and I kind of like keep an eye on them. The way that these things operate is like, have you used Slack before?
Never.
Slack is basically like kind of like a Facebook, but like it's all like groups, right? It's all sort of like different groups where you can kind of differently like orient different conversations on different issues, right? A lot of offices use it. A lot of,
I think I can figure out, like,
yeah,
it's just like
channel, like they have a channel in like the DSA New Orleans Slack, for example. They have one that's for labor. They have one that's for, you know,
it's
different committees.
Just like a Discord.
Yeah, it's almost exactly like Discord. Yeah. And apparently somebody and anybody can post in most of these channels. There are ones where you can just like only have like people with admin privileges are allowed to post, but most of them, as a sort of function of the platform, is so that anybody can post so that it can be communicated, right? And the way I understand it is that whoever posted this this script or whatever that talks about how So it says, quote, "I like Elizabeth Warren, optional. The script begins. In fact, she's my second choice. But here's my concern about her." And then the script pivots to criticisms of Warren, which is, why would you not have that if you're volunteering for a campaign?
I mean,
why would you not make a difference between two candidates?
Yeah, like comparing and contrasting.
Yeah,
like,
saying two things are different. That's an attack.
It's pretty bad. But did you also, not to like do another like segue, but did you see the interview that the NYT like editors board did with Bernie or something?
No, I didn't.
Like, they asked him like kind of bad questions, and then they just asked him like boring, like useless questions. They were like, I don't remember which one, but then they didn't answer how they wanted to, so they pivoted to like, "Hey Bernie, what's your favorite app? Like, what's your favorite app on your phone?"
The failing New York Times.
Like, what are you talking about? Like,
Bernie doesn't even know what an app is.
My favorite app is nothing. Like, yeah. I'm worried about this country.
My app is like getting into in front of a crowd of people and screaming at them about millionaires and billionaires. That's an app to me.
He's like, this is all immaterial.
Yeah.
But if you have a time, check that out.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait. That sounds really awesome.
Like, all the like New York Times like editors' names like all run together to me. Bert Stevens or like Steve Burton's or something like that.
Brett Stevens is one of the particularly bad ones. The bed bug.
Yeah, but they had a guy whose name was like almost exactly the same
Steven
thing.
Steven Burt's.
Like, yeah, it's crazy. Like, plus, like, somebody made a good point. I think it was probably just somebody on Twitter who was like, the New York Times is like responsible only to their shareholders. Like, they're not like they're not a public servant.
No, they're the failing New York Times. They're the reason that they're even existing is so that like, and that's a critique of you know, capitalist media in general, is that they're here like based, like necessarily based off of the structures and framework under which they operate, which is for profit in capitalism. They have to turn a profit. So as a result,
they either have to like be interesting or like serve their corporate masters or whatever.
And so far as those things, like it's sort of a range, right? It's almost like it's not a dichotomy. There are points where they're, you know, being credible, I guess, is marketable, or like it meets with quote unquote market demand, whatever the hell that means.
But you have to have like an aura of like
the,
you know,
anchoring an actual truth, right? That's what you're talking about. You're right, and I agree with you.
You just become like, if you just become like a GM magazine, they're not gonna like ever read you.
Yeah, they're a newspaper.
Yeah, I don't know.
But their editorial team, though, is sort of like notorious at this point. I mean, for having people who kind of like they straddle from like, you know, David Brooks and like all these like nominally like right wing guys who call themselves liberals or whatever.
Yeah.
They have like these, and they have like a Keynesian like economic guy, like Paul Krugman, who is like basically in alignment with like Elizabeth Warren on basically everything, right? Which is not the worst thing in the world, I suppose, but it could be absolutely infuriating at times. But then it kind of like ranges to like these Brett Stevens and Barry Weiss and these sort of like people who represent what would be considered to be like the intellectual dark web.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
Yeah. And so like that's sort of like the range of opinions that the New York Times sort of like messes around with. And plus like the complete detachment from any human connection of Thomas Friedman.
Yeah,
the world is flat.
Like, people don't live in like the actual world. Like, these people just like go to wine and cheese parties with like other journalists.
Yeah, they think the real world is Twitter.
Yeah. they just like go to the market and they'll be like, "I saw an interesting thing at the market." I like Mickey Rooney or Andy Rooney or whatever.
Yeah, they're all Andy Rooneys. They're a bunch of Andy Rooneys running around like talking about how they know everything. And like you know like Bernie or like anybody who's not just him, but like people who sort of like want to push a working class agenda. Like, well, that's just never going to work. And, you know, the political realities are just against it. And it's like well.
The meanest thing they'll say about, like, autocrats is like, oh, this is unprecedented. You're not supposed to do that.
I suppose they're undemocratic, but they sure do get the job done.
Oh, man. Those trains, they really
they're running on time.
Jeez.
Say what you will about Hitler.
Yeah. Independent media, please.
Yeah. 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 That's why you should give your money to WHIV.
Yeah. That you can hear us talk about Elmer's green onion, you know, Cheetos.
And we can take it. We could tell truth to power. Hey, New York Times, hire me to write about how bad you are.
Yeah, man, I'd love to see that interview.
Look, I'm here to speak truth to power. You look, are power.
Look, I don't have a lot of writing
I'm here
experience.
To speak truth to you. I do have writing experience.
Well, you don't have a lot of writing experience. Like, published writing experience. Like, look, I haven't been published that much, but look, just hire me and I'll just tell everybody about how bad you are.
Well, you know what? I guess the way to sort of like actually, if you did want to audition for that job, if you ever like wanted to sort of like move into that territory, you would just have to go to a different publication and just start sniping at them until you got their attention.
Yeah, they had to like
you just like make,
shut you up or whatever.
Yeah, you just like make you make your beat like talking about the failing New York Times. And then next thing you know, like, New York Times is like, you know what? We're going to, like, give you a contract and put you on our editorial board. You just have to stop.
Like, I feel
this.
Like that's how you become,
you have to stop
like,
embarrassing like, us.
You just, that's how you become, like, a Brett Stevens, like...
Yeah, that's how Brett Stevens come into existence.
Like, he
the
probably
creation
was,
of
like...
bed bug.
He's probably like, I don't like you guys' crossword puzzles, so they're like, we got to put this guy on ice.
Yeah.
You can't have this firebrand out there.
Yeah, oh... The crossword puzzle, that's like church.
That's sacred, man. People waiting at the laundromat are going to be furious. They're going to be not putting bounce pads in there when they put their dryers.
Cats and dogs living together.
Yeah.
Mass hysteria.
Fabric softener is like running dry. Nobody's got it.
We're a bunch of dry boys up here.
Yeah. But yeah, that's enough about them. What else is going on?
So I guess we could take this as an opportunity to pause for station ID. You are listening to WHIVLP New Orleans 102.3. This show is called Good Morning Comrade. You can listen online at goodmorningcomrade.com. We usually have shows coming out on Tuesdays, some Thursdays, most Thursdays, not always on Thursdays, but keep an eye out for us, and we'll be sending things out through our website as well. So what you got, man? What's on your mind?
Oh, man. That's been working a lot. Like every time, like things happen, I get another job. Like,
you got any bad boss stories or bad work stories? Or
no, I've actually got pretty good bosses right now. I'm pretty honored to have, like, three good bosses and a good like station owner at like Mark Allen Dairy. Like,
you heard it here first, folks. This is the boss's praise show.
Yeah, don't get used to it. I'll get other jobs where my bosses are bad.
Yeah,
I've had bad bosses, of course. Like,
lay it on me.
Nah, I mean,
yeah, come on, lay it on me. Come on, you know, it doesn't have to be a current thing.
I mean, I worked in a sound warehouse where, if you ever said the word union, they would like, they like swore they would just like kick you out of the industry and kill themselves. They like commit seppuku if you like ever brought it up.
That's like what happened at Gothamist a while back. Remember that?
Yeah, I don't remember. Oh, I remember they like parted that thing out for like no reason.
Well, there was a reason. Oh, there was a reason.
Well, not a good reason.
I guess that's a matter of perspective. Right?
Yeah,
for like what's the name of that family? The one that owns they own the Cubs, which makes the Cubs bad, by the way.
I don't know, the Wrigleys. No, I know the gum people don't own it anymore.
The gum people have been put out the pasture.
I mean, people don't chew gum anymore. That's how empires fall.
Yeah, this is the end of an era. The gum has been passed by, or at least
the dentist. The dentist really messed them over. Yeah,
when Orbit swooped in, they just kind of like took the entire legacy market share. They've innovated. They've innovated the gum economy and disrupted it.
I am Ozymandias. Look upon me gum empire.
Look upon me gum works, me mighty in despair.
they really gummed up the works there.
Oh, they did, didn't they? Oh, Jesus Christ. You're gonna roast in hell for that one.
But I mean, I have some pretty bad boss stories. I was in the military.
That's a bad boss. Like, I was your boss at that point, right? Technically.
I mean, yeah, technically. And it was miserable.
In a very limited sense.
You're a terrible boss.
What was it? So, talk about some terrible military stuff. You're out now. You can talk about this.
Great. I'm free and clear, baby.
Yeah, they can't put you in a brig anymore.
We had this chief one time, and like everybody hated this guy. Like, people knew his reputation. He was just the worst guy. Like, he'd make people just do stupid shit. Like,
You're making me come back. You're a bad boss right now because you're making me come back and edit because of your curses. You're foul.
But anyway,
foul potty mouth.
They would be like deployed with this guy, and he'd be like, "You guys aren't working hard enough. Let's like just do push-ups or like do fob walks and like pick up trash like everywhere," which is fine. But like, he wasn't doing it for the right reason. Like, he's like a bad bachelor contestant. He wasn't doing this for the right reason.
But he was in there for the glory of it all.
Yeah, but anyway, this guy comes to like our base, and like, he's our new chief, which is like kind of a big thing. He's like the highest enlisted person like in our chain of command, and he has me and two other guys who are like, we have like no rank at all, like probably had like four stripes between all of us. So he has us in his office.
What is a stripe?
Like our like rank designation.
Okay, so when you say you have four stripes amongst all of you, that
stripe,
means that
like stripe like a zebra stripe.
So like, yes, I understand that, but like, that means that you have low rank.
Yeah,
bunch,
I was
bunch of bottom bunch, of, the bunch of privates out here.
He basically just wanted to like size us up or whatever. So he has us in his office, and like, he's like kind of like looking at us and all, looking at our uniforms, and he goes, "I don't like your face. I could just something about you, man. I could just punch you." I'm like, what? This guy's like supposed to be like my boss's boss, like telling me this.
This
stuff
is not
like,
professional, sir.
Yeah, he's like over here, like the guy from like Step Brothers, just like telling me this dumb crap.
He's Will Ferrell.
For real.
Yeah, like drill sergeant Will Ferrell.
Dude, it was the worst. I mean, to be fair, Rob Riggle was in the movie, and that was the character who like person who did that character.
So,
but it's just like,
so is Rob Riggle bad?
That is a good question. He's like military. I mean, he's like Marine officer, which is kind of like,
that means he's bad.
They're known to be like very self-serving. Like, they will put anybody out like under the heat lamp just to like make some good paperwork. Also, they don't give like decorations very often. And like, even if people do like very good stuff,
they're Marines.
Yeah, a Marine officer. Like, Marine officers have like a reputation for being like self-serving.
Oh, venal.
Yeah, like they won't give people anything for nothing, kind of. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, but you were in the Air Force.
Yeah, I was in the Air Force.
Which is like,
they give people decorations.
The Chair Force, as they like to call it.
Yeah, love that joke.
I'm sure that's the first time you've heard that one.
Yeah.
Did they have nice chairs, though? But let's be honest here. Like in terms of, have you seen chairs from other branches of the military?
I mean, yeah, they're fine.
Which one has the best?
I mean, we all have, like, swivelly chairs.
Ooh,
with like,
ooh, that sounds good.
I mean, I worked in a motor pool and also, like, deployed, kind of, like. But, like, when you're deployed, the chairs get less good, but.
Oh, they get worse chairs overseas?
Yeah. A lot of sitting on the ground. Like,
oh, that's not even a chair. That's not even a chair. How can you even be in the chair force if there's no chairs?
Sitting on like concrete barriers and stuff. sitting gets worse. You're sitting on like trailer beds and like big metal trucks.
Yeah, you, you want to talk about your deployments at all?
One day.
One day? Oh, tune in, folks. Listen up. But
yeah.
But you mostly did a lot of driving and a lot of like.
Yeah, that's all sitting.
Yeah, I mean, was your driver's seat for the bus and the trucks, were those nice?
Yeah, they're pretty good. Yeah, they
did
have the things that like, go up and down.
Did you get one of those like bead things on the back that sort of, I guess,
something? That is unauthorized.
Really? You couldn't do that?
I mean, we just didn't happen to buy. Like,
could you have purchased it off base and brought it on?
We never went off base, except when we went on missions and stuff.
But like when you were domestic, when you weren't deployed, when you were working at...
No, that's ridiculous. Like, we got in so many vehicles, like, I'm not just going to carry this thing around for when I sit down. Like, the chairs are comfortable enough.
Gotcha.
Like, these are just, like, regular car chairs, and, like, when, like, 18-wheelers, they make the trucks, like, they make the seats pretty comfortable on account of, like, they know you're going to be sitting in them for a while, like...
Right.
They have, like, kind of air cushion underneath, so it's like you're kind of floating a little bit. Go down, you go up.
Yeah, that's not something I ever really thought about. Sort of like the accessorizing of a chair that, like, a driver would have. I mean, yeah, it makes sense so that you would have nicer chairs.
Well, yeah, good ones, they have the armrests, which go up and down if you need them, because, you know, you don't have to hold your arm up and steer.
Yeah, cup like, holders, I'm sure, are big.
So, like, let's say you're driving, like, 9 hours straight, and, like, that makes a difference. Like,
yeah. Like, you gotta have someone to put your arm.
Yeah. You gotta have things, like, in your reach. Like, you have, like, a drink, you have, like, a snack. Because, you like, when you drive, you don't stop.
No, when
like,
you drive, you're driving. This is work. I mean, driving is work, you know? People don't think about it like that.
Driving is such work.
And so, when I think about people who that commute... and you have to like drive an hour or 30 minutes or whatever to get to work, and you don't really consider that part of that your work time. It is a part of your work time.
Oh, it is. Commutes are work.
Yeah. I used to have to drive, you know, an hour or 45 minutes each way when we lived in Picayune after the storm just to get to, you know, my terrible job at Applebee's. So basically, I had to drive 45 minutes in, 45 minutes back. And that was totally unpaid. You're actually paying for that time that you have to drive because you have to pay for gas and maintenance on your vehicle and oil and all these other things, right?
Yeah, commuting is like work.
That's an extra tax that bosses put on you.
That's why, like, one good thing about the military was, like, as long as I was in the military, I was, like, 5 minutes away from work. Because I lived on base as long as I could.
Yeah. Yeah, that's smart. That's the way you got to do it. I mean, that's the way you can save money, too.
Everybody was like... You dummy. Well, actually, they give you less, like, they take your stipend, your BAS and BAH, like, they don't give it to you.
I don't know what those things are. What a BAS and what?
BAS and BAH are the things you get to, like, afford living off base.
Okay.
And meals.
So.
You get that on top of your pay, but, like, when you live on base, they're like, well, we have a chow hall, so you don't need that BAS.
Oh, they would give you or take away extra money. Yeah. Based and off of where you... So you actually got more money from the military if you... What?
Yes.
So, I don't mean that staying... I mean, I guess maybe you, in the long run...
I stayed on base because it was like, well, I have to, like, juggle all this.
You don't have to think about this stuff.
I don't have to deal with my cable company and all that. Like, but, like, that money that they don't give you, it goes to maintaining the dormitories that you stay in.
That's fair. That's actually fair.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like,
it's probably cheaper, though. They're probably getting off a bit cheaper just by the fact that it's all, like, collectively, you know, run, like, apartments, essentially, right? They have you in a human filing cabinet, in a certain sense.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I never went to college, but it is, there's a common area, and they're, like, four...
Yeah, it's not different than dorms. It's not different than dorms.
And you have, like, a bathroom, your own bathroom. And
yeah, you got a place to eat, you got a place to pee, you got a place to, you know, all the stuff. You like, what more do you need? It ain't living luxury, but it's living alive, and you don't have to think about stuff, right?
Yeah, why would I live, like, off base when I could just drive 5 minutes to work every day, and there's no traffic coming in the gate because I'm on base.
Is there, so when I think about these kinds of things, because we talked about this in the past about how like we've solved the sort of like needs based problem.
Yeah.
Just like by having like the problem with the military isn't the fact that like people can live on base and they can survive as, you know, like somebody who does that. It's the problem is that the military is a killing machine, right?
And oh yeah.
And like, so like the part that's good about the military is that at least we've figured out how to house people in an efficient way, and we've figured out how to make people essentially live with a certain degree of dignity, you know?
I mean, there's like bureaucracy involved. Of like course. You have to go to like, yeah, you have to like go to these like places and like figure it out, and like there's hoops you got to jump through, but you know, it's not as like, it's not as much of a like a problem as like
I can't make my rent this month.
Yeah, like if you break down on base, like you could get to work.
Like, but there's not like a bus on base.
Well, I did drive the bus on base, and there was a shuttle, but like people stopped driving it. People stopped taking it for some, I don't know why, but like my head's so far out of that game. I used to have to think about stuff like that every day, but now I don't. But like there was a shuttle that would be every half hour, and then we started doing it every hour, and then we just stopped doing it.
So you got sort of like taken out of a job in a sense.
Well, no, they just reapplied us because there's always going to be needed vehicles, and so like there's always a fleet. Like we had a very broad like mission.
Yeah. Interesting. This is really genuinely interesting to me, and yeah.
It's interesting stuff. Like it's all about like logistics. I was doing logistics for 8 years, and logistics are like complicated.
Yeah, and it sounds to me that you have a certain amount of experience that you've taken away from this that you could apply if you wanted to various like different areas. Like so, we've talked privately, not on the air, about you sort of like hopping on with, you know, like a Teamsters or something like that, like a driving union, like a job that's got that kind of work within it because you have that kind of relevant experience. Would you ever sort of like consider going into that sort of field of driving and logistical work or whatever? Not necessarily the management side, absolutely. But like,
well, there's like at the lowest levels, like there are low level managers, which is kind of what I became.
In the military, you mean?
Yeah. And I got on the side of like dispatching, which is kind of like running the whole, like having an eye on the whole like perspective of everybody.
You're coordinating.
Yeah, coordinating. But you know, it's
big
rough.
Picture stuff.
Yeah. But it's really interesting.
But you've thought about getting back into that, or no? You think you kind of like
done
with that
part of
life?
I don't know where I would do it. Where the hell would I do that?
Well, there's jobs. I mean, like, there's trucking jobs that you can. I mean, I don't know if you would want to do that.
Trucking industry is very usurious. Like,
what do you mean by that?
Like, they will lock you into like a mortgage for your truck.
Yeah, yeah, I have seen that, and that's sort of a thing that.
And then they'll make it to where you have to run like so hard that you like can't afford your truck anymore, and they repossess your truck.
That sounds like Uber does, actually. You know, when they do, they have these deals where they'll like, you know, subsidize, or you know, maybe not even subsidize, but they have like this access to get like these certain contracts for your car that you would use for Uber, right? And it sounds like one side of that was modeled off of the other. I'm not exactly sure which.
What came first?
So essentially, it sounds like truck driving has been gigified in a certain sense, right?
I mean, what came first? The industry that came up with the terrible thing, or the Silicon Valley place that reinvented it for like everybody?
Right. Which came first, the horrible business practice or the app?
Yeah, the app with the horrible business practice.
The one that like streamlines like, the streamlines the exploitation.
Uber just put it in the Apple Store.
That's a good point.
But like, they're also like It's funny because I make pizza now.
That's okay, because I mean, before were even in the military, you were, because you and I both worked at some of the same restaurants. Scott and I are brothers, and we both worked at some restaurants, seafood restaurants primarily, before you ever got into pizza. Then
very different was our experience, because he was a front of the house guy and I was back of the house.
I think more than like rival brothers. The biggest disagreement between you and me in our entire lives.
Yeah. One you're that a makes waiter, it I'm a cook.
Yeah, it's almost irreconcilable. It's like cats one of these dogs. Things where we're enemies. We hate one another. Why are we on the same radio show talking to one another? Because of this.
We hate each other, but we hate the customers more.
So here's the difference. When you're front of the house waiting tables, like working that, even if you're a busser, it's like to a lesser extent because you're getting tipped out, which is like one layer of abstraction from direct, interface with the customers, even though there are elements where you're not getting directly tipped by the customers when you're a busser, right?
Yeah,
you're getting tipped out by the servers. So what you're trying to do is like make the server happy. And part of what makes the server happy is making the customers happy, right? It's not directly customer dependent. But at the end of the day, the reason that like servers get pissed off at kitchen people isn't because they hate kitchen people. It's because the food's taking too dang long for these ridiculous customers that are screaming at them.
Or we don't put like chives on something.
You not put the chives on?
Yeah,
or when you're not supposed to put the chives on, and you do.
Or there's something like,
was it on the ticket? Yeah,
there's something you can't take back. Like if it's chili cheese fries, and they said no chili, you can't take chili off of chili cheese fries.
You can't undo it.
It's under the cheese and over the fry. Yeah.
It's mixed in. It's liquid. It's disgusting.
Yeah, like that would be like that's like brain surgery at that point.
Yeah, you just got to do it over again, and somebody gets to eat it.
But
that was one of the other things too. One time after I worked at a restaurant in, this is almost like a very sad story, because I worked at like some restaurants in Florida.
Oh no!
When I so after the storm, after Hurricane Katrina, you listen to WHAVLP New Orleans 102.3, by the way. After Hurricane Katrina, we evacuated to Destin. So we lived in St. Bernard Parish, where our house got like an 8 feet of water or something crazy like that, and a foot of oil from a local refinery, which is a whole nother story that we should talk about later.
Oh, buddy. This is the program for that.
Huh?
This is the program for that.
Yeah. Anyway. We could not live in Chalmette for a little while because our house got destroyed and everything around it got destroyed, right?
We were exiles.
We were exiled by God. God exiled us.
God said, he cast us out.
Yeah, on the eighth day, God said, get the hell out of Chalmette.
Yeah. Rude.
But anyway, I worked at some so we evacuated to Destin, Florida, which is a place where tourists go. There's a lot of beach, like a very nice beach there, and we kind of just sort of ended up there because when the storm happened, it was like beginning of September, end of August, beginning of September, and
summer's done. Fork is done.
The boys of summer were gone, and
the cold wind blowing in.
And by the way, like Kimberly, my wife and I disagree on this, but like there's nowhere more miserable than like a beach at wintertime because it's so bitterly cold and windy and humid.
We can talk about that another time because I got a lot to say about that.
But anyway, that was the time where, like, we were getting the end of the nice time, even though there was a lot of, like, jellyfish and stuff, because that's when you go to the beach in September, then there's all jellyfish there. But it sort of, like, graduated to trying to find work at at restaurants out there, right? And I've worked at restaurants for most of my life. Even now, I'm a teacher now, but basically from when I left LSU, actually my very first job was service industry. My very first job was working at my ex-girlfriend's mom was the manager at the Burger King, and I somehow got a job there.
Destin, Florida. Go back.
Fast forward to Destin. Like, there's this very sad story where I was like working with some of these like food runner type people, and people who, most of them didn't even speak English, right? People in the kitchen, like lovely folks, loved the hell out of them, but like they would occasionally at these like fancy schmancy restaurants screw something up, and like, I was poor as hell. I didn't have any money. I was like begging my roommate not to kick me out because I couldn't afford rent this month again. I was in that situation, right?
Yeah.
You've been there, right? Maybe not. But I remember one night where I had not eaten in like a day or two. And when you're working at a restaurant in a kitchen and there's food everywhere and you're hungry, it's the worst thing ever because you're just like, that smells delicious. So anyway, somebody screwed up, and I remember this specifically. Somebody like accidentally made an extra like lobster bisque or something like that. And me and this other kid who were like, who's also a food runner or a busser or whatever, were like looking at it, just like, oh yeah, we're going to rip this up. And some freaking narc, some absolute, like, they're probably a cop now, wherever they are. Whoever you are, screw you, person. I don't remember your name even. But they looked at us while we were like trying to like chow down on this food while we're starving. And they're like, if Chef sees you doing that, they're gonna fire you immediately, no questions asked. And it was like, wow, like me and this person like locked eyes, and we basically like cried at one another. It was very sad.
What was this?
There's a place called I don't even remember what it's called, but it was in Destin, Florida.
What kind of restaurant?
It was a fancy schmancy ass restaurant.
You probably thought all your problems were over.
Yeah, no, actually they're worse. Those kinds of places are terrible. Because you have like one tyrannical small business tyrant who's in charge of everything, as opposed to like a corporate cold hearted like business only doesn't actually care about inefficiency. That's the difference between small business tyrants and corporate like operations, is that inefficiency is sort of like built into the framework of corporate, but like the small business tyrant is so like very much like direct control. It's almost like a Calvinist tyrannical like totalitarian system.
Man, I was, I forget when this was or where this was. I'm sure it was in New Orleans, but, I was talking to somebody that worked at like Antoine's.
Yeah.
And, they were like, oh yeah, I got sent home because I had like a small stain on my shirt.
Oh my God. I've been there.
Yeah.
Man, when I worked at, like, I waited front of the house, right? And part of the thing about being front of the house, I worked at two awful places, and I'm not afraid to talk about them. Like, their dogs, because they're bad. I worked at Zia, and I worked at Copeland's. Yeah. Now, I worked at P.F. Chang's, too, and they were also not the best, but they were actually kind of okay to work at. But Zia and Copeland's...
like dark shirts there.
Huh?
They're like dark shirts
they
there.
They were jeans at Chang's now. I'm just like, wow, I wish I could get away with that in 2008. But
yeah,
anyway...
You still try to... Every time, if we have to do a P.F. Chang's, you do still try to be like, hey, does so-and-so still work?
And anyway, they would get on top of your, they would eat your lunch, like come on top of you at the service meeting, because they would have a meeting right before every shift where everybody would, and it was as stupid as that, Zia, because it was almost like a affirmation that everybody would say, or like a cheer. And one of the things that they would always check for, it was worse at Zia than Copeland's, but they would always check for the crease in your arm sleeves and in your pants to make sure that you ironed your stuff.
Oh, no.
And I'm just sort of like, you're lucky I washed this stuff, because I'm clopening pretty much. Yeah. You know, I worked here until midnight last night. Yeah. I'm here at 11 o'clock in the morning. I don't have an iron. I don't have a washer and dryer. I don't have anything to make it so that I can, like, press this shirt. I can go to laundromat at 11 o'clock at night, I guess. But, like,
you know what service people do here? Like,
yeah.
We work
all the time. You work all the time, every day. Man, when I worked at, back in the day, when we worked at Schaefer's, both Scott and I both worked at Schaefer's in 2006?
Yeah.
Seven?
Rip Mike.
All right. Yeah. Mike was a real one. He was a capitalist or whatever, but, like, he was at least a real person.
He knew how to run that restaurant. Like,
he knew how to not be a freaking clown about it.
Yeah.
But, anyway. Like, anyway.
He was just like,
Go ahead.
But he would just hold court at the bar, and, like, if you had a problem, you bring it to him. He'd be like, "Well, this is what you do."
Yeah, he was like a mafia boss. He was the Don of the restaurant. Anyway, the 100%. But I used to work, because that place was open Monday through Saturday, right? I worked double Monday. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't closed on Monday. I worked a double Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. I worked every shift at that restaurant, and I was still, like, hurting for money all the time.
That's so insane.
Yeah. And that was, like, I was probably in a better spot than a lot of the kitchen people, to be completely honest.
Yeah, we didn't make anything.
They're making, like, $7.50 an hour or $5.15 an hour. Like, that was back when minimum wage was $5.15.
Yeah, we were making, like, $8 or something. Something bad.
It sucks. It's way, like it's better than $5.15, I guess.
Are you kidding me?
That's horrible.
I was prepping fish and shrimp. I was portioning catfish and butterflying shrimp with a guy from a halfway house. And, like,
yeah,
he was like, "I'm not making enough money to live at the halfway house." And then, like,
they literally, like, couldn't afford
and went back to jail.
Yeah, that was probably a better economic decision than he could have made.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. Because, yeah, they had a lot of halfway house folks there. And, yeah, like, man. Yeah, well, I mean, it would actually be something that could be perceived as, like, a community service or whatever, bringing people in a halfway, if you paid them. But if you're going to use it as an excuse to not pay somebody, then you're actually just exploiting the position of people who are, you know,
also,
being reintroduced to society.
The house takes, like, half their money.
That is insane, man. Yeah. I don't know how halfway. We actually probably need to do, like, a deep dive in a halfway house. We should talk to somebody who's possibly lived in one, because that's a real situation, you know.
Yeah. They're rude as hell, those people. Yeah. Like, and if they go home and they're not, like, perfectly behaved, like, they'll just like lean on them and be like, "Listen, I run this place. Like, I see people. I send people back to jail all the time." Like.
Yeah, they're basically like a drill sergeant, right?
Yeah. Talk about a small business tyrant.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because halfway houses are for profit. They are literally small business tyrants.
No way.
They're like,
I did not know that.
They're like small business prison guards.
Jesus. Imagine having, like...
Maybe I'm wrong about that. I could be wrong about that. They might not be run for profit. I cannot imagine that they're not. I imagine that they are run. I think they are, like, kind of like charter schools.
Imagine getting out of jail and having a parole officer and a halfway house, like, manager or whatever. Jesus.
Oh, my God. That is so totalitarian. Well, on that note, we're hitting our time. So think about that. If anybody knows anybody that's either lived in a halfway house and, like, would like to talk about that experience, or is anybody that, like, works with folks from those kinds of places, hit us up. Contact at goodmorningcomrade.com. You can also get more information about Good Morning Comrade on whivfm.org/good-morning-comrade and goodmorningcomrade.com. You can also just drop us a line any of those ways, Facebook, Twitter. Listen to us every Tuesday. Scott, last word, what you got to say?
Let me say it. Love you. Bye.